Hello. My name is Leslie. Welcome to our podcast featuring excerpts from Dr. Ed's morning briefing, which is produced by our team at Yordani Research. Today's commentary is dated Tuesday, March 10, 2020, entitled Pandemic Pandemonium. The first topic focuses on the latest coronavirus news, good and bad. The pandemic of fear continues to spread faster than the cause of that fear, namely, the COVID-19 virus. As an investment strategist, I've been more concerned about the spread of fear than the spread of the virus. As a virologist, remember, we are all virologists now, my working hypothesis based on everything I've been reading and conversations with a few medical professionals is that COVID-19 is very similar to other coronaviruses that cause colds and the flu. COVID-19 is also similar to the coronaviruses that caused SARS and MERS. It seems to be more contagious than these next of kin, however, with relatively mild symptoms for 80% of those infected. As I observed yesterday, many of the mild cases may be so mild that they aren't detected and aren't reported. While the pandemic of fear continued to spread in financial markets yesterday, the balance of good versus bad news on the spread of the virus tipped toward a happier outcome than widely feared. Point number 1, good news on the virus. The news out of China actually improved yesterday. Authorities there reported the fewest number of new cases of coronavirus since infections started being tracked in January. China's National Health Commission reported 40 new cases of the virus yesterday, down from 44 new cases the previous day. China now has 80,735 total cases, among which 19,016 remain in treatment, and 58,600 have been released. More than 3,000 have died. In South Korea, the number of new cases slowed on Monday to 367 from 483 the day before. Until recently, South Korea had the most cases, 7,478, outside of China. Point number 2, bad news on the virus. But the pandemic is continuing to spread rapidly elsewhere around the world, with the details reported on Monday, rattling global stock markets. Italy is about to surpass South Korea as the country outside China with the most cases. Italy has been put under a dramatic total lockdown as the coronavirus spreads in the country. Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte announced that he is extending restrictions already in place in the north. The government is also shutting down its museums, which include access to the Sistine Chapel, until April 3. France is banning events of more than 1,000 people to limit the spread of the coronavirus. Iran has suspended all flights to Europe. Everyone arriving in Israel will be required to self-quarantine for 14 days to prevent the spread of the coronavirus. Saudi Arabia has suspended pilgrimages to the Muslim holy cities of Mecca and Medina. It has also cordoned off access to many towns in the east of the country. The second topic examines how coronavirus fears are infecting the markets. As I've observed in recent days, the response to the fear is more damaging to the global economy than the virus itself. The fear factor is much greater in panic attack number 66 than in all the previous ones. These fearful responses are already depressing the global economy, commodity prices, and stock prices, while sending interest rates to record lows. We all know what the economy, earnings, and stock prices will do if the virus doesn't go away soon. They will all go down. Do we really want to stay home all day with the kids? We may just have to learn to live with the virus as best we can, washing our hands often, etc., until vaccines and cures are formulated. But what if the virus behaves like previous coronaviruses, disappearing in not too long? If that's the course it takes and if that course becomes more obvious soon, just as the tulips are popping out of the ground and the cherry trees blooming with their blossoms, then panic attack number 66 might still play out as simply the latest panic attack to be followed by a relief rally. Let's have a closer look at the implications of yesterday's fearful response to the latest news. Point number 1, S&P 500. After plunging 7.6% yesterday to 2,746.56, the S&P 500 barely remained in correction territory, with a drop of 18.9% since the record high on February 19. By the way, yesterday was March 9, exactly 11 years since the current bull market started, measured on a market close basis, at 676.53. Keep in mind that the S&P 500 is still up 306% since then. The bull market would have ended yesterday, on its birthday, with the start of an official bear market, had the S&P 500 fallen to 2,708.92. putting it 20.0% below its February 19 record high. Now the index need fall only another 1.4% to confirm that a bear market, rather than a correction, has been underway since February 19. For trend watchers, it's notable that the S&P 500, which fell 10.0% below its 200-day moving average yesterday, also found support at its trend line connecting the bottoms of October 3, 2011 and December 24, 2018. If that support doesn't hold, then the odds are that we will be entering a bear market very shortly. Joe and I still think it would be more like the bear market during late 1987 than something worse. For contrarians, the good news is that sentiment has turned increasingly bearish. The bull-bear ratio, BBR, compiled by Investors Intelligence, fell to 2.04 during the March 3 week, down from 3.31 during the final week of 2019. The bad news is that most of that drop reflected a drop of bulls, from 58.9% to 41.7%, as many of them moved to the correction camp, from 23.3% to 37.9%. That certainly doesn't indicate panic or capitulation. The percentage of bears rose slightly from 17.8% to 20.4% since the end of last year, through the March 3 week. Debbie and I expect more signs of capitulation in today's data from the March 10 week after yesterday's sell-off. Point number 2, crude oil price. Yesterday's stock market rout was triggered by the collapse in the price of crude oil. On Saturday, Saudi Arabia announced massive discounts to its official selling prices for April. Reuters reported that the Saudis are planning to increase their production above 10 million barrels per day mark. The kingdom currently pumps 9.7 million barrels per day, but has the capacity to ramp up to 12.5 million barrels per day. Their action was prompted by the unwillingness of Russia to participate in a production-cutting deal with OPEC. While this game of chicken between Russian President Vladimir Putin and Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman is dangerous for both men to play, the biggest loser might be U.S. shale oil producers. That collateral damage must be appealing to both of them. Data for November of last year, the latest available, from the U.S. Energy Information Administration, show that the U.S. plus Canada produced a record 17.4 million barrels per day. That well exceeded Russian and Saudi output in November, at 10.9 million barrels per day and 9.9 million barrels per day, respectively. During February, U.S. crude oil production has been hovering around a record 12.9 million barrels per day. OPEC's share of world oil production fell from a recent peak of 42.4% during September 2017 to 37.7% during November of last year. Of course, the immediate underlying problem for all the oil producers is that oil demand has been depressed by the global health crisis, as flights have been cancelled, cruise ships have been quarantined, and people have been driving less. The plunge in the price of a barrel of Brent crude oil this year, back to the lows of early 2016, is depressing the revenues of world oil producers. The hit could be as big as $500 billion, at an annual rate, compared to a year ago. That's bad for energy-related capital spending, but it is a big windfall for consumers and other users of petroleum products. However, the stock prices of the most obvious beneficiaries of lower fuel prices, such as airlines, still saw their stock prices tumble yesterday on virus and recession fears. Point number 3, Treasury bond yield. The flight to quality has turned into a panic for quality in the U.S. Treasury bond market. Since January 24, when the coronavirus outbreak first made headlines, the 10-year U.S. Treasury bond yield plunged from 1.70% to only 0.54% yesterday. Over that same period, the comparable TIPS yield fell 47 basis points to minus 0.45%, while the expected inflation spread fell 69 basis points to 0.99%. Point number 4, credit quality spreads. While the 10-year U.S. Treasury bond yield has dropped close to zero in recent days, other long-term yields haven't dropped as sharply or have moved higher. This strongly suggests that investors have stopped reaching for yield and are now stooping for safety in the Treasury market. That increases the risks of a widespread credit crunch, which have always caused recessions in the past. Before that happens, the Fed will likely cut the federal funds rate to zero and resume QE, quantitative easing, bond purchases, including possibly corporate bonds, which would require a change in the Federal Reserve Act, as we discussed yesterday. Since January 24, when the coronavirus first made headlines, the corporate junk bond yield rose 194 basis points to 7.17% on March 9. Its spread over the 10-year Treasury bond yield rose from 353 to 663 basis points over the period. That may be the start of déjà vu all over again. It's very reminiscent of the widening of this spread during 2015, as energy-related junk bond yields soared while oil prices plunged. The 30-year mortgage rate has lagged the drop in the Treasury bond yield, especially in recent days, as the spread between the two soared from 200 basis points on February 12 to 297 basis points on March 6, and likely surpassed 300 basis points yesterday. The spread between the AAA municipal yield and the 10-year U.S. Treasury bond yield turned positive in recent days for the first time since 2012. That's all for now. Thanks for listening today. Please see the hedge clause on our website www.yourdanny.com. Please let Dr. Ed know if I am doing a better job for you than Siri or Alexa. Have a great day.